Welcome to the Single Wives Podcast, a place to explore ways to both survive and thrive.
I'm Terry.
And I'm Wendy.
And we'll be your hosts. So let's get this conversation going.
Today, we have the honor of having special guests. These are people that I have known for a very long time. They're dear friends of mine, and they work in the world of story in every way possible. So today we have Pete and Joyce Vanderpool, and instead of trying to just read a canned bio about them, I will pass the microphone to them and let them introduce themselves. So if you would, tell us who you are, what you do, anything you'd like us to know.
Hi, I'm Pete Vanderpool, a.k.a. Paddleboat Pete, and Santa Claus. So you really have four guests today. You just never can tell who's going to show up. I'll try to stay in the Pete mode.
And I'm Joyce Vanderpool, and I'm married to Pete, thus the same last name. And I only have one name. So we still have four people here. I think we're going to have some fun discussing the power of story.
I think it's interesting when we talk about how many different people are at the table right now. It really is just the three of us. But the different characters that Pete and Joyce, or personas maybe is a better word, they take on and use to professionally tell stories and represent the art of storytelling are fantastic. So, Pete, tell us a little bit about your current project as Paddleboat Pete.
Well, everybody in this town, in this area, knows me as Santa Claus. I've been a mall Santa now for 31 years. And as a storytelling friend of mine said, Pete, you know, you are a character. If you want to tell stories or book yourself as a storyteller, then people are going to expect Santa stories. What you need is a persona. And he's sitting on my couch and he looks at the ceiling and he says, Paddleboat Pete, river wise and story full. Now the Holy Spirit lives in my world. And 5 minutes later, after that came out of his mouth, the phone rang and a lady said, I need a storyteller. Would you be available? Paddleboat Pete, river wise and story full. And she says, oh, I love that. That was my first gig as Paddleboat Pete.
Oh, that's amazing. So it's interesting. You've already brought up words that I would love to dive into because they really have significance to our audience. But I'm going to hold that for just a moment because I'd love for you to tell the story how you became Santa in the first place.
Well, it was the 23rd of December in 1991. A friend of mine from church, who was the manager of a downtown mall in Appleton, Wisconsin, said, Pete, I need you to be Santa Claus. And I said, I don't know how to be Santa Claus. Well, that was the beginning of a 10-minute argument. Finally, she said, look, all you got to do is put on the red suit, hang on the beard, sit in the red chair. How hard can that be? I finally said, okay. That was the beginning of my Santa career. The next year, as I came back, I began to get all kinds of neat stories. And I thought, I really would like to be able to tell these stories. There was a big article in the local paper about a storytelling guild that was right there in Appleton. So I went and I joined it. And I found out that the storytelling world is much, much bigger than Santa stories. It included Jack Tales, Appalachian folk tales. It included personal stories. And that was the beginning of my career in storytelling. So I've been a storyteller for 28 years or so.
Now, Joyce, you said you don't have a separate persona, but I have known you for quite a while as Mrs. Claus. What's your introduction into story?
My introduction was, of course, through him. And I thought, all right, if he could tell Santa stories, I can tell Mrs. Claus stories. But that wasn't really great. You know, there wasn't that much opportunity to do it. So I started getting interested in other kinds of stories. I'm still not the storyteller that Pete is. I'm a story facilitator. And what we ended up doing was starting a nonprofit corporation called Creative Story Project, in which we use the power of story to help people with Alzheimer's and dementia, as well as with at-risk youth and learning-challenged folks. So that was the way I started using story.
And that is kind of what drew me into story. Tell me, first of all, how do you use story with dementia and Alzheimer's patients?
Well, our method is just to use a simple, silly picture, give the same one to everyone in the room. We work in care facilities, not with individuals. So we have a room full of people who have, let's say, diminished capacity, but they're still there. So what we want to do is stimulate their imagination. We're not asking them to remember things. We're trying to stimulate their imagination. And if I say, what is that dog doing talking to that skunk? You never know what kind of an answer you're going to get. Usually, they're pretty funny. And so we end up writing fun stories that we then get back to them in printed form. They can read them themselves in many cases, but they also share them with their family. So not only have we stimulated their imagination and given them an activity that is fun and builds community, but we've also given them something that they can share with their family.
So it's not putting a pressure on them to remember things of the past or people of the past, but it's expanding their imagination, that ability to just come up with new ideas. And it connects them, in turn, with their family, which is just an amazing program. I think you've written a book as well called Equipped to Bless. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, as we came away from the applied story, and what we've talked about really is applied story, we discovered there was a power in story, a real power in story. And the book that was written by you and me.
Okay.
You can't get away from that. You started out as a ghostwriter, and then you contributed a story, and I said, that is a feminine story, not me, so you are now a co-author.
Okay, I'll
give
you
that. It was called Equipped to Bless, Finding Relevance in the Stories of Your Life. I'd like to share with you an analogy that I think is important to this whole story power thing. I call it my railroad analogy. If you are standing beside a railroad and the rail is above at about eye level, you're standing lower than that, you see a whole bunch of rocks built up. And they're not real big rocks, but it's more than just gravel. At the top of that, you see the end of some railroad ties. And if you look to your left, you'll see one, and a little way down, there's another, and another, and another, until it just goes off into oblivion. I liken the rocks to your facts, the things. You went shopping last Tuesday, so what? You went to the dentist last Thursday. Those kinds of things are just facts in your life. You don't remember anything particular about it. But there are stories that you remember vividly because of the emotion involved. It could have been something like an auto accident. It could have been the death of somebody. You remember those things. So I say those are those railroad ties that are going off to your left. In the book, we talk about threads that will take you from one significant story to another one. It may be 10 stories back or 10 railroad ties or whatever. But by being able to take one thread and go back through those stories, then you come up with a whole different solution, maybe, to something that has been bothering you. The railroad tie that you see from this vantage point is your human journey. When you are able to get up higher, you look and see on the other side, there is another rail. And that one I call your spiritual journey. And Joyce points out that no train can run on just one rail. You need both of the rails. And in fact, both of the rails are tied to all of those railroad ties. So when you go back with your threads and you pick on one particular story, there's a spiritual component to it that you may not have recognized at the time, but it is there.
Okay. So I remember as we were going through that process of putting the book together, you had a specific story about being a teacher. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. I was trained as an engineer, and I've done an awful lot of engineering in my life, and it was successful. But I've always maintained that I should have been an English professor in a small New England college. Well, I kept bringing it up as we were writing the book, and finally you got tired of it and said, well, go back through your life and see where you have been a teacher, if in fact you have. Well, lo and behold, I'd been a substitute teacher in the local school system. I had been a Sunday school teacher for a long, long time with both children and adults. I had been a Boy Scout leader with several thousand kids knew me as Uncle Pete. And it turns out that when I was in basic training, Navy boot camp, I was elected the educational petty officer. So I really had been a teacher all of my life, just not in the area that I thought I should be or with the audience that I thought I should be addressing.
But yeah, I mean, it's very meaningful. I've done the same thing. And as a counselor, I do this with clients as well, where we go back, we create a random timeline, and then start looking at the individual stories related to those time periods, looking for common threads. And it's really fascinating how out of the smaller stories of our life, we see a bigger story at play. And so that's been a wonderful journey for myself, for you, for a lot of people. There was a question that came up out of that I think is particularly helpful in a lot of situations, but I think for our listening audience, it's one that we could probably spend hours discussing. And that question was, who's writing your story? How did that come about? What's so important about that question?
Well, when we were writing the book, we were looking at the things that were affecting your story, and who seemed to be a very important thing. You can go back to very early childhood, and it may have been a Sunday school teacher, it was a parent or a grandparent, and when you look at it, you see what kind of influence that they were having on your life, and it was who's writing your story. It was very important. You may have found a high school teacher that said something to you and you never forgot. I can remember my 11th grade English teacher who said, people who live in glass houses should undress in the cellar. Now, why do I remember that? I don't know, but it was funny at the time and it still is, kind of. But that influences my life to some extent. I loved English, and it was probably her influence that did more for stimulating my interest in English and thus being an English teacher. So we look back at the stories, and at that point in time, who was the prime thing?
So when you look at the question of who's writing your story, I think that is extremely powerful and quite foundational in the community that we are a part of as far as single wives, where we're in marriages that are emotionally disconnected. Maybe there's verbal and emotional abuse or concerns, and we struggle with losing ourselves and we feel stuck. We feel trapped at times. And I think looking at that question, who's writing my story, the first answer that comes to mind is, well, my husband's writing my story because, you know, he holds the pen. He is the one who either refuses to connect or connects in ways that are not healthy. And so, you know, in time, we end up just giving him the pen and allowing him to write not only his story, but our story, and the story of us. in between, right? So when I ask the question, who's writing my story, and I answer my husband, I'm off track a little bit, wouldn't you think?
Yet the question really should be, who should be writing your story?
Right, right. So it's not my husband who should be writing my story. I think the answer is twofold in that, in who should be writing it, and that God created us, and He's the one who is the author of our story. But He gives us the pen as well and says, okay, you have the choice to write your story with me. So we're co-authors with God in a sense. And our husband was never meant to be that person in our lives. And I think our culture, for one thing, kind of sets us up to believe that, you know, he has all this authority. And culture, maybe conservative Christian culture in particular, drives it, because we've been taught that he is the head of the house, he is the one in charge, the spiritual leader. And, you know, honestly, Terry and I both would say, okay, yes, God did give spiritual leadership to men, not men in general, to the husband in a marriage relationship. But what does that mean, right? It's not a dictatorship. It's nothing like that. And yet somehow it's morphed into we submit to a non-benevolent dictator at times. And that's not what God intended. God intended to be the true husband. He calls us the bride. He calls the church the bride of Christ. And He is the loving, true husband that fills all of those empty places in our heart. And it's not our husband that was intended to be that. So who's writing our story? Who should be writing our story? It's God. And we hold the pen with Him. Another question that came up probably a little later that circles back around to the power of story is the question, what's writing my story? You ask people that question even randomly on the street sometimes. How does that go?
It's interesting to see the facial expression when I say, what's writing your story? Because it is a very thought-provoking thing. If you're in the corporate world, it could be customer service, it could be employee relationships, it could be financial situations, it could be product definition. There's all kinds of things that could be writing the corporate story at any given time. But if I ask an individual, what's writing your story? Yeah, right, in today's world, you probably would say, well, the COVID-19 is writing my story. Well, that's true, but we need to go deeper than that. What is writing your story? Well, things at work. It could be things in my marriage. It could be things at church. Those are other things. It could be experiences you're having. It could be lessons you've learned that you just can't get over. It can be endings. The endings are not bad things. Endings are where one door closes and another one opens. And when you look at your life and you see, gee, I've had this door close again and again, maybe I ought to not go back into that room so that the door has to be closed or another one opened. So there's all kinds of things dealing with the what is writing your story.
Joyce?
As a woman, I want to add to that some of the things that influence you are children, preparing lunches for school, probably transporting the kids to and from school. There's all kinds of things like that. And besides taking care of kids, there may be, like you said, something ends and something else begins. All of a sudden, a woman finds she's pregnant, and maybe she wasn't planning it. That adds another thing to her story. It may be a new beginning, but it may also be problematic. Or there may be a new job change, and it means we have to move. Or we have to make a decision whether we want to move or not. Some of these things can create problems within a marriage. Also, things like the empty nest syndrome. I hear at our age, we're well past that, but we're seeing that some of our friends are now facing that.
So the questions of who's writing my story and what's writing my story are questions I would love for us all to look at deeper, and this coming week begin to kind of get the paper out and write down different people and different things that are writing your story right now. Because when we look at that, we're going to take that and move forward in the process of story and kind of evaluate what do I need to keep? What do I need to let go of? Am I not able to let go of? I mean, I have the kids and the lunches and the taxi cab driver and all of that that I can't just let go. But how do I begin to write it into my story in a different way that helps me as the main character in my story become the person God created me to become my authentic self?
There's one thing that we never talked about with the railroad analogy. You're standing here, and I said everything to your left is the story, but there's a whole bunch of them to the right, and those stories haven't been written yet, and exactly what you're talking about now is how do those stories come to be? The input is who's writing your story, what's writing your story, exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely. I cannot wait. This is exciting. If you're interested in getting a copy of the Equipped to Bless, Finding Relevance in the Stories of Your Life book, you can check out the details at emergewild.org. That's emergewild.org. It also could be found at singlewives.org. Hope you'll listen next time, and we will talk to you later.
Thank you for connecting with us for another week. Please continue to check out our resources on our website at singlewives.org and also on our social media platforms.
If you find the podcast to be helpful, please share it with others who are also looking for a community. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. Until next week.